Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Hello and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Tuesday, August 8th of 2023. I am Paul Gallant, and this is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. One you can jump aboard in a variety of different ways. By phone, 713-780-3776, as you just heard Spencer Tillman say coming into the segment. That's the HR&P listener line. You can also do it on our often toxic Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Heard some fun imaging on my walk over to the station today from Spencer talking about how I think Coug Blaze is gaslighting some folks in the Twitch. You can also get after us on Twitter at Gallant Says, at ESPN975, at Sean A. Mapes behind the glass. Sean, good morning, afternoon. How are you now?
Doing good. The listeners won't know that the adversity that you just fought through right there, but I think you did a great job. No one would have known if I didn't call attention to it or if we didn't have a Twitch.
We're not going to linger on me untangling my headphones again. We did that once. Unintentionally, I don't know how wires get crossed the way that they do, and I do wish that there were such a thing as wireless headphones in radio. Alas, the invention does not yet exist. Let's talk about the Houston Texans to open the show for a change. The Astros didn't play yesterday. They were at the White House. I'm sure Tucker Paulson has some thoughts on that. It was an unpadded practice at training camp yesterday, but that is no longer the story. The Texans released a depth chart that showed C.J. Stroud as the starting quarterback. Would stand to reason. That means that Stroud would be the first quarterback on the field in Thursday's preseason opener against the New England Patriots up in Foxborough, Massachusetts. After practice, DeMeco Ryans, the head coach of your beloved Houston Texans, sat down with Jane Slater and Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network. Jane Slater directed DeMeco to talk about the quarterback competition.
What are you seeing with the quarterback battle right now, and where have you seen the maturation of C.J. Stroud?
It's been a fun process with both our guys, with C.J. and Davis. I've seen both guys improve each practice. Davis is playing better. C.J. continues to improve each day. We put these guys in a lot of situational football to see how can they handle it, and they both, right? There are some growing pains on both, things to learn from, but that's what ball is about. That's what practicing is about, being in difficult situations, learning from it, and improving. And the next time you're out, right, showing your team that you're the guy to take the helm. And it's been fun to watch. Both guys made plays, big plays down the field, and our offenses, they're coming together really well, and I'm excited with where they are.
Blah, blah, da, blah, 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 blah. Right? Head coach doing his job, putting some fog, some mystery over the quarterback competition, mentioning that both C.J. Stroud and Mills have done well this camp. And by all accounts, they both have done well. But we got to do some journalism here. You got DeMeco Ryans on national TV for a live interview. Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network pressed DeMeco to give us something, anything. And whether intentionally or unintentionally, oh, we got something.
Dean said competition, but this is four straight days CJ's taking the first team reps.
He's the number two overall pick. Is this competition over at this point? Is he the guy?
Yeah, we're still working through it. We're still working through that, and then we'll see once that once we line up, you know, on Sunday in regular season versus the Ravens. Ravens, CJ will go out first versus the Ravens. Well, I mean, versus the Patriots, he'll go out
there
first.
That's a Freudian slip right there. Then,
I know, right?
Got him, finally.
But we'll go out there first. But, guys, everybody will get reps, and we'll come back. We'll watch it and see where guys are.
Now, there's a chance that D'Amico Ryans confused the Patriots game with the Ravens game when talking about it in that spot. We do know that Stroud will be the first quarterback for the Texans on Thursday, though, from that answer. And who knows what's going to happen a month later when the Texans take on the Ravens. But you can't go back from this. You can't. You can't give fans this and then backpedal. I'm not sure that the people at the top of this organization, who I am assuming are giving at least D'Amico Ryans autonomy, if not also Nick Caserio. They did talk about collaboration during that awkward press conference where it felt like the McNairs wanted Nick Caserio to sweat it out for the firing of Lovie Smith and for the failures of this past season. But do you think that this organization, which has been down so bad for a couple of years, is going to let D'Amico put the genie back in the bottle? Put the toothpaste back in the tube? No, it's over. And this is great. We don't have to even bother with this anymore. We don't have to pretend that there's an actual competition here. We can just get right into taking a look at C.J. Stroud and throwing him right into the fire. And I understand there might be some real arguments as to why the Texans shouldn't put Stroud in right away. I get it. Especially one of them being Titus Howard's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks after having hand surgery yesterday. That does not make you feel great about the right side of the offensive line. You just saw Scott Questenberry tear his ACL, which means that Juice Scruggs is likely going to be your starting center. But it's not like there aren't any other options on the roster. As someone who covered the Seattle Seahawks, George Fant is a pretty good swing tackle that they signed a couple of, I think, weeks ago. I imagine he will step into that Titus Howard spot at right tackle. This is a guy who started for the New York Jets not too long ago. I'm not saying he's one of the best tackles in the league, but as far as backups go, that's pretty good. You have a huge, highly paid offensive line in front of C.J. Stroud. Throw the guy right into the fire. The only reason you wouldn't throw a guy into the fire is because you take a look at the offensive line in front of him and you think that line is going to get him killed. And maybe back in 2002 when the Texans had David Carr under center, maybe they should have actually thought to themselves, you know what, let's not put Carr right in there. I think that Carr had his own issues with work ethic off the field that were one of the reasons that he never became a guy that made good on being drafted first overall. But we can't deny that the guy was getting sacked 70 times that effing season, right? He didn't have much of a chance. And yes, C.J. Stroud doesn't have great wide receivers around him, but you have a decent enough offensive line at the very least. If not good, if not great, when it's 100% healthy, that's going to involve Kenyon Green being better. We've heard good things about him from D'Amico Ryans, but what does that actually mean before a game? And we'll see with Juice Scruggs. There are obviously questions, but you got to throw Stroud right in there. I understand the idea that you let a guy wait, you groom him behind the scenes. You could point to Aaron Rodgers behind Brett Favre. You could point to Patrick Mahomes behind Alex Smith. Are we really being truthful in assuming those guys, if they had gone straight in, wouldn't have succeeded? Maybe it would have taken a little bit longer, but I mean, we all saw Patrick Mahomes in his first full season as a starter, and everybody that covered the Kansas City Chiefs and that was a part of that organization back during his first season in the league, 2017, they all said that the guy was stealing the show at practice every single day. It's not to say that Stroud's going to do that, but you generally know right away whether or not a quarterback is going to be good. People that act like this development is going to come over time are talking out of their ass. And we had that last year with Davis Mills. I was the only one setting you straight. Some people, I don't know, I guess they see quarterbacks better than others. Helps to watch Tom Brady growing up. Humble brag. Back to earth. He either has it or he doesn't. You may as well find out as soon as you possibly can. And with the offensive line you got in front of him, maybe not the best receiving core, I'm glad that this is out of the bag, even though Oh, boy, that is an interesting first take headline. Even though we have not gotten to the start of the regular season yet, hell, we haven't even seen a preseason game. How do you walk back from this if you're the Texans? You just don't because you can't. And then I imagine there will be some pressure from up top to make sure that Stroud, as the starting quarterback, remains the starting quarterback. I mean, this wasn't a great day for the Houston Texans, was it, huh? Anyone see that news about Javier Lawyer? Loya, a less than 1% minority owner of the Texans since 2002, who has also served on the league's diversity committee. He faces multiple criminal charges in Kentucky. One count of first-degree rape, 5 counts of first-degree sexual abuse, 1 count of third-degree sexual abuse. His lawyer said he unequivocally and categorically, which is, of course, just the best and go-to lawyer, big words, denies these allegations and will vigorously defend his innocence, and that he's voluntarily and 100% passed a polygraph test, whatever the hell that means. I don't know what this guy did or did not do. All I know is that, yet again, here is a bit of a black eye in the Texans. Is it somebody that anybody knows about? No. It doesn't matter that nobody knows who the hell he is. He's a member of the Texans. They got to keep all of the positive goodwill that they have for a change actually in their court. They have to do everything they can to keep this going. And that includes Stroud the rest of the way. We will see what happens. We're going to have DJ Bien-Aimé, who's been out at Texans training camp, join me in the 11 o'clock hour. I don't think the Texans are going to go back ever from Stroud. I don't think they're going to announce that Stroud's the starting quarterback going forward. But yesterday, that Freudian slip, I think that is exactly what's going to happen at the start of the year, as I've been telling you for the last couple of weeks. Paul Galancho, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well. Your beloved Houston Astros made the trip to Washington, D.C. before they open up a series against the Baltimore Orioles and their sensitive little wuss of an owner, John Angelos, tonight. What happened at the White House? You'll hear it next.
ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. Dude,
I'd be most worried about seeing my seminal vesicles.
Or like the Florida State seminal vesicles?
Welcome back to the Tucker Paulson Show. The Houston Astros came out of the closet as woke yesterday when they bent the knee to false President Joe Biden in the White House. And now they're in danger. By walking into noted Phillies fan Comrade Biden's house, they're opening themselves up to more potential witch hunts. You thought jealous baseball owners were mad about the cheating allegations? Well, just wait until the geriatric in chief makes the Astros the center of investigations into January 6th. Just wait until President Biden says that his son's laptop actually belonged to Jose Altuve, or that cocaine found in the White House was actually the late Ken Caminiti's. What is happening? What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. In Fuhrer Biden's America, you never know when you'll be made the fall guy for a failing administration. So the Astros did go to the White House yesterday. And I really only have one observation. And this is not meant to be political. But boy, Joe Biden seems old. Here he is talking about Dusty Baker. And while talking about Dusty Baker, he also said that, yeah, you know, Dusty's not the only one that gets criticized for his age.
Remarkable achievements led by, and this is not hyperbole, the legendary Dusty Baker. Worst part was I remember rooting for him as a kid, and I was older than he was. Dusty, wasn't easy. People counted you out saying you're past your prime. Hell, I know something about that. I know something about
that. He kept the laughter going a little too long. But he did, at the very least, remember the jokes that his speechwriters wrote for him there. Those were solid, right? Where he's saying, one, that, yeah, I was older than Dusty Baker as a kid, and I grew up rooting for him. And the other one there. But again... There's a part of me that after watching this press conference yesterday that feels like, I don't know, Dusty Baker's really got a lot of pep in his step. And honestly, I wouldn't mind the guy still being the manager after this year. Here's more of the president.
That's what we want to do. That's what you did. You did it for a whole lot more. Yes, sports is about winning, but it's a lot more than that. The best, it lifts people up, it brings them together, it helps them be there for each other. I was honored to host the 2020 Houston Astros, 2022 Houston Astros here at the White House. And by the way, congratulations. I didn't even say that part yet. But no.
No. Look, I'll stop with the low-hanging fruit. My big issue is it bums me out that there are as many elected officials in our government that are that age. And we're seeing a lot of them have moments where they're not throwing their fastball anymore, right? Like we had it with Mitch McConnell the other day.
He was literally throwing nothing. He was not throwing anything.
He's just there. Anyway, Dusty Baker, on the other hand, Dusty Baker still got his fastball going. And of course, he's 74. Joe Biden is 80. But he talked about how this clubhouse loves each other before making a nifty little guarantee for the end of the year.
And they had each other with unwavering support for each other and love for each other. I mean, I think that is probably one of the biggest things that this team has compared to other teams that I've been in the past is that they genuinely loved each other. And when I asked the late Bill Russell what was the keys to the Celtics, whom I didn't like very well, he told me that they loved each other. 2022 was never about one individual. It was about a group of men coming together to accomplish something very special for this city that supported them. I love them all. You've got to love each and every one of them, and it's the only way to come together in a special feeling that is tough to describe and hard to repeat, but we plan on repeating exactly that feeling.
Hell yeah. And we feel pretty good about their chances. The Astros begin a series with the Baltimore Orioles tonight, and for those who maybe aren't paying attention to the entirety of baseball this year, the Orioles have probably been the best story in the sport. That might change a little bit when we talk about something that they did to somebody who is one of my friends. But 70-42, they lead the American League East over the Tampa Bay Rays, who had that ridiculous start to the year, by 3 games. They've won 8 of their last 10. What they've done this year has truly been awesome, especially for people that are fans of teams that stink. And that brings us back to Dusty Baker, because this is why we like Dusty Baker. I'm a fan of Dusty Baker. I am. Yes, like with many managers, we have questions about the lineup from time to time. But I think a lot of the people that are stressing about it online every day are low-key losers. Like, get a life. It's difficult to juggle what he had to juggle with all the injuries. And it's not his fault that guys like Jose Abreu and Jeremy Peña have struggled to the degree that they have this year when there's not really an everyday option you can put in their place in that lineup to fix things. But this line from Dusty Baker talking about the next series for the Houston Astros, a series in Baltimore that begins tonight, is the best.
And we're in the middle of making it happen right now. Coming off a great series in New York, heading into a big series in Baltimore, probably the biggest series that Baltimore has had in a while. But hey, I'm known to be honest, you know. No harm intended.
Don't you love that Dusty Baker, who, as the president even said, I want to say, what, 10 minutes ago in that little speech that he gave introducing all of the heroes of the 2022 Astros, said that everybody in baseball was rooting for Dusty Baker. A lot of people across the United States were rooting for Dusty if they couldn't figure out a way to root for the Astros. Don't you love that Dusty's been touched by the evil, and even he's joining in and being a heel? And he does it in an affable, likable way, but I love that. I saw the tweet about him saying that, and I was like, I want to hear this. And he knew exactly what he was doing. He even did the dramatic pause afterwards as if he were a stand-up comic to let it really just marinate in the air. And then he goes back, like, listen, I'm just honest. I love it. What a great defense, and what a great shot taken. Now, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little nervous about this series. This is perhaps a preview of a future playoff series for the Astros. I want to know just how good this Orioles team actually is. But I love that shot from Dusty Baker. The confidence. It's fantastic. And he's right. The Orioles haven't played a big series like this against a real American League team. We're talking about the Astros here. And God knows how long.
Do you think that these comments, if the Orioles see it, they might ruffle some feathers?
Noted little P-boy, John Angelos, who Wikipedia has listed at 4'9". I don't know if that's true, because you can edit height on Wikipedia.
There's no way he's 4'9".
I hope to God it's true. There's nothing, because here's the only thing in life that you could potentially have on a rich person. It's if you're taller than them. That's all you have. So if a rich person ever talks poorly to you, if you happen to have like average height and that person's a wee lad, it's the only comeback you have. And guess what? They will be so angry inwardly when you point out the fact that they're a little pee boy. Now, again, I don't know what John Angelos' height is. I will say this. John Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, and we'll talk about this in the next hour because I don't want to make this entirely a show of where I can air my petty grudges against people. I don't like it when people mess with my friends. You can mess with me, but Kevin Brown, who was also the voice of the Home Run Derby this year, super talented ESPN broadcaster, one of the first people I met when I went to Syracuse University. We've been in a fantasy football league together for the last 12 years. This is a great dude. And he said nothing wrong. He basically just pointed out, yeah, the Orioles have struggled against the Rays at a historic level until this season. And then it changed. And they suspended him for it. And we've talked about John Angelos before, because this is the same guy who in the middle of a press conference once said, I'm not going to answer questions because it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We don't need to play the audio yet. I'm just saying it's great to see owners of poor franchises who also are extremely thin-skinned exposed, in baseball in particular, because baseball owners are largely anonymous. They get the height by being anonymous because the vast majority of American sports fans couldn't tell you who the owner is of a baseball team that's not in their city. Some diehard baseball fans, I think, do know it. John Angelos is exposing himself as a baby and an ass. And I do hope that the Astros absolutely murder the Orioles over the next couple of days. Not because it will do anything for my friend Kevin. It's more because I just want John Angelos to realize just how little a man he is. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call in and to text in. We continue our countdown to the start of the NFL season next. We are at 30, and with number 30, we got to remember one of the all-time worst Houston Texans. Stick around.
ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5, Sweet Sassy Molassy.
John Stockton says, hey, look at me, I'm a little teapot, I'll run right up your dress. But then Karl Malone says, Sweet Sassy Molassy, you are going to pay a lot.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Countdown to the NFL season continues on the Paul Gallant Show.
30 days away from the start of the NFL season. There is one great number 30 in NFL history, but let's talk about the worst number 30 in Houston Texans history. that honor belongs to Amon Green, who the Texans signed to a four-year, $23 million deal back in 2008. Check that, 2007. He played for the Texans for 2 years, 144 rushes for 554 yards, 25 catches for 155, released after his second year. Does seem like that was a guy that was brought in entirely because the Texans assistant head coach Mike Sherman liked him when Sherman was the head coach of the Green Bay Packers and had Green there. Amon Green's post-playing career is something else. He's an avid video gamer and comic book fan. So much so, on the latter, that his nickname is Batman. You can't call yourself Batman, though, as a nickname, can you? Like, you have to have some sort of bat in your name if you're going to pull that off. There was a guy in the Celtics back in the early 2000s named Tony Battee, and they called him Batman. That was kind of believable. Kind of. Because we're, again, not talking about a billionaire playboy who moonlights as a vigilante because he enjoys beating up, you know, like thugs and such.
Well, he's trying to clean up the city.
Yeah, he's trying to clean up
the city. The only way he knows how.
Watch out. If you jaywalk, he'll hunt you down and just beat the hell out of you. You know? So, let's be honest. Like, I do love Batman, but Bruce Wayne just wanted to beat up poor people. This was his way of doing it. Anyway, Green was also in the movie Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, as an unnamed thug, but his scene was cut from the final version of the film. Release the Snyder Cut! Maybe it actually was in that version of the film.
Release the Amon Cut.
The Amon Green Cut. Yeah, let's get that. In June of 2017, he was arrested on charges of child abuse and disorderly conduct after his daughter claimed he pushed her and struck her in the head over a dispute about chores. He entered a plea bargain, pled no contest to reduce charges of criminal damage to property and disorderly conduct. He claimed he did not want to subject his daughter to a jury trial and received 18 months of probation. Can you guess, Sean Mapes, what Amon Green started doing in 2020? He became a coach.
Oh, I was going to say Twitch streamer because he said he liked video games.
Close. He became a coach of Lakeland University's esports team.
Oh.
So he's an esports coach. And there you go, guys. That's the Amon Green story.
A lot of twists and turns.
A lot of twists and turns.
I'm glad in this little write-up it mentions one of my favorite Texans, Sam Congatto.
Congatto.
Great name. Great, better than Amon Green.
I forgot about him. The real number 30 we should remember is Terrell Davis. For those who don't remember, Terrell Davis was the sixth running back on the Broncos depth chart after being a sixth-round pick in 1995. But in 1995, during a preseason game in Tokyo, he absolutely wrecked a dude returning a kickoff. With each preseason game, he got up and up the depth chart, and he went from being on special teams and kickoff coverage to being the starting running back. During 1995, his rookie year, he ran the ball 237 times, scoring 8 touchdowns and 1,117 yards along the way. He was the lowest drafted player ever to get over 1,000 yards in his rookie season. He, of course, was very good in his very brief career. He played through a Super Bowl with migraines, and he is probably one of the main reasons that John Elway was eventually able to get a Super Bowl ring, MVP of the league in 1998. Terrell Davis, he was a fun, tough-ass player.
What's the crazier part about the Terrell Davis story? Terrell Davis story. The fact that they played a preseason game in Tokyo in 1994, 1995, or that a team carried 6 running backs back in the day.
That's how it used to be, man. I mean, it used to be a running league.
Between Amon Green getting $10 million, or no, getting $5 million a year in 2005 money, and this, it's crazy.
Go back and watch 1990s football. Sean, this is going to sound patronizing, but when was the last time not playing in a football video game that you saw a team line up in the I formation that wasn't on the goal line?
Michigan football? Like,
right.
Like
this
Wisconsin?
Is like Iowa.
Yeah.
This is all Big Ten. You don't see, and this used to be like a common staple. It's so interesting going back and watching like 90s football, which I was a kid watching, and to see the formations and how like comparatively lame the offenses were. And it really was just about a battle in the trenches. We have come a long way, and a part of it has to do with the rule changes. And some people don't like the rule changes that have happened. But yeah, Terrell Davis would have been like one of six guys vying for time in an I formation that also would have featured a fullback who would have gotten a regular amount of carries too.
I don't know the last time like the Texans have had a fullback.
They technically do on the depth chart that they listed, but I imagine that they won't use him much given that that starting depth chart has them lining up. I think it's an 11 personnel, so that means that there's one tight end, one running back, three wide receivers. So their depth chart has three starting wide receivers. But their starting fullback is Andrew Beck.
Oh, Andrew Beck.
So there you go. Let's continue to go around the NFL. Now, I do want to touch on something that we saw during a segment, and it was distracting because there's a TV in studio, and there's a TV in the producer room as well. Sean, we saw a headline for a First Take discussion featuring the B or C team about Micah Parsons as a Hall of Famer.
Yes, the little top headline said high hopes, and then the bottom one said more likely Micah Parsons first ballot Hall of Famer or Cowboys Super Bowl.
That's actually an interesting question now that I think about it. Embrace debate. Man, they got to get a different quarterback than Dak. I think first ballot Hall of Famer is more likely.
Well, I think it's like a what happens first, right? Or it's a like more likely to have, because is it Cowboys win a Super Bowl with Micah Parsons?
I guess so.
Or is it just Cowboys just win a the Cowboys franchise?
Yeah, Cowboys winning a Super
win
Bowl
a Super Bowl
Parsons.
Before he gets enshrined in Canton.
Yeah,
that's like 20 years.
Right. So
they gotta win one. They're gonna win one. Mm. And that's not even like saying like, well, what if Micah Parsons just like isn't a first ballot Hall? What if he's a second ballot Hall of Famer? What if he's like, you know,
he's probably gonna like, be a first ballot like, Hall of Famer with this start though, man. I mean, he's come into the league and they've moved him at every single position. He's getting a ton of sacks. I'm not going to make the Lawrence Taylor comparisons because the old heads will get pissed off if you do that, but I mean, he's come onto the league and he has been incredible. I don't, first ballot is not far-fetched for a guy like Micah Parsons. This has been one of the, I would say post Aaron Donald, probably the most impactful defensive player drafted in the league. And that includes guys like Myles Garrett and others. He's up there. I'd have to put together a list. T.J. Watt was maybe drafted after Aaron Donald.
T.J. Watt and the Bosas, or Nick Bosa.
Yeah, maybe Nick Bosa. That's really it. Speaking of speak for your pizza kind of shows, Richard Sherman is going to join Skip Bayless to debate him 50 to 100 times a year. I think that this clip on First Take happened after Richard Sherman had started yelling during that post-game interview with Aaron Andrews and was unfairly criticized for yelling in that spot. He was animated. He was pissed. He hated Michael Crabtree, which it seems a lot of defensive backs, Aqib Talib, another one of them. Remember, he used to steal his chain all the time. Seemed to hate Michael Crabtree, Texas Tech legend. And whatever the case, I was surprised watching this back by how, like, steady Richard Sherman is here as he essentially tells Skip Bayless that he's a nobody.
Skip can say whatever he wants, but Skip, whenever you refer to me, whenever you speak to me, whenever you address me, address me as all-pro Stanford graduate, because those are some accomplishments you can aspire to, you will never accomplish. You have never accomplished anything. So, but those things are on my resume. Those are what I've done. It's my second year in the NFL, going on my third. I mean, you tell me who's wrong.
Okay, I'll accept that. I think I've accomplished more in my field than you have in yours, though you're just getting started.
So I'm the top of my field. So I'm all pro. I'm the best, of the best 22 players in the NFL. You're going to brush it off, but I don't think you're the best 22 anything in sports and in media and anything. I think you
debatable.
Think more of yourself than you actually can, you know, prove. But
okay, do you think you're better than Darrell Revis is right now?
In my 24 years of life, I'm better at life than you.
Okay. So let's, all right, that's
let's,
fair.
Let's
not get personal here.
Let's not get personal here. I want them to get personal. 50 to 100 times a year, I will actually watch one of these. I will actually watch one of these. And I never watch the screaming on TV shows because I generally feel like the only way that you can debate this many topics is if there's forced disagreements. That's my big issue with it. I think it's really hard to be authentic on a show like that. To each their own. Must be nice to get paid a lot of money to do those shows, especially considering they're generally on mute at the gym more than they're on any other television with people sitting there and watching them. But I will watch one of these, at least one.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. I mean, again, like the chances that I'm up at like 8 o'clock, 7:30, I'm like, you know what? Let me hop on FS1, watch Undisputed. You always screw me up with the speak for your pizza.
It's not a real show, but I like no, to say it as if it's a real
but
show.
But it's also like cold pizza just isn't a show anymore.
That's
and then
true.
Speak for yourself is like the
not
like,
a show anymore either.
Is like the worst of the, all of these shows.
Hey.
And and we're never actually talking about either one of those shows. But yeah, I mean, 100% of my viewing of First Take, Undisputed, Speak for Yourself, First Things First, all of them come. Either in here when they're on mute, like you said, or like social media clips where people right. are like, look at this clown.
Emmanuel Acho.
Yeah.
By the way, we haven't talked about Emmanuel Acho in a while and cannot wait. Cannot
wait. Has he
wait.
Been on vacation or something?
It's just, seriously, I've been, maybe he blocked me and I haven't been able to see his stuff because some people have blocked me. You know, I was going to talk about how in and around the NFL, like I relate to Odell Beckham Jr. who blocked me once because I called one of his tweets so meta. He sent out some stupid cryptic stuff like wide receiver divas are prone to do. But Odell Beckham Jr. said this about Super Bowl 57 between the Rams and Bengals where he tore his ACL. People have no idea what I was actually going to do that day. It was going to be the day where I catch 15 balls, maybe 250 yards. We would have won 42-17. And that's how I feel about the media flag game that took place on Saturday.
That's what I was saying. Like, you, the way you're talking about was a diva wide receiver.
But, I mean, it's different because I'm really good, you know?
So is Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham Jr. and I, like, we're winning at life, unlike the other mm-hmm. people. Shut up.
What? No, I'm agreeing. I'm going, mm-hmm.
No, that was
no,
sarcastic.
No, sarcastic. I was actually trying to be a good teammate.
Sarcastic.
No, that's your own insecurity. I was trying to be a good teammate there.
Well, speaking of teammates, would you get in a fight for your coworker?
No.
Well, Sean, we're going to talk a little bit more about it directly next, but thanks for that answer. I'm not going into Foxhole with you. Paul Galacho, stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Watch out for that foot bone.
I would like to rear up and jackknife my legs and kick you both in the jaw with my foot bone.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I saw on the internet over the last 24 hours. One of them was just brought up on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I don't know if you guys have seen TCU freshman offensive lineman Breon Ramsey Brooks. He is 6'5". He is 455 pounds. I'm a little concerned for his health, not going to lie. The picture of him is something else. Because it's not like he is this wide load of a man. The biggest football player I can remember was, I think, Green Bay Packer, Kevin, I don't know how to say his last name. I think it was like Jabba Biamia.
That sounds familiar. I mean, it's a hyphenated name, something
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
I forget his last name. That guy was big. I remember Gilbert Brown with the Packers also. I don't know what it is about the Packers. You just seem a lot bigger there.
Yeah, it's Wisconsin. Gotta be warm.
Ted Washington was big. This guy's 455 pounds. I think those guys were approaching 350.
There's a Florida that I literally looked up Florida defensive tackle 400 pounds and they had a 400 pound line or no 400 pound defensive end Dez Watson, who came in at nearly 450 pounds as a freshman.
Holy crap.
And they've had to work him out to get him thinner, believe it or not.
And by the way, I don't know why. I think I confused Gilbert Brown with Kabir Gajbat Biamia because he's only 249 pounds. I was off by a good 100 pounds or so. Let's see. Gilbert Brown was one of those guys, though, where he had like a black visor on as well. And it just made him look super intimidating. Gilbert Brown was 340 pounds. 6'2" makes that stand out a little bit more. But this guy is 455 pounds. That is absolutely bonkers. Anyway, something else I saw on the internet. Tim Anderson, who famously was punched out over the weekend by Jose Ramirez, he is trying, I guess, to tweet through his lost fight in that Guardians-White Sox game. He just put out a bunch of cryptic stuff on the internet. You know all this happening for a reason. We staying focused with this bleep. Been going through this bleep for a minute. Keep kicking on me while I'm down. It's kicking me while I'm down. A lot of MF been switching up too. Hashtag fake bleep. Y'all got me bleeped up. For real, for real. Wow, he did it for real, for real. Tim, are you in your 30s? Hope you picking up what I'm putting down too. The picture bigger. Okay, let's step away from the computer, Tim Anderson. You just need to stay off the internet for a good 2 weeks. And guess what? When you come back on, you're going to get roasted, so you may as well make fun of yourself for this. There's no moving on from this. But this isn't the only thing involving the Chicago White Sox that became a big deal yesterday. Keenan Middleton, who is famous for saying he hates the Houston Astros for the cheating allegations, a guy that I've interviewed once when he was with the Seattle Mariners, a guy who's been on a lot of teams, is now with the New York Yankees after being with the White Sox earlier this year. He said that the White Sox had players sleeping in the bullpen during games. Others were missing meetings and practices without repercussions, saying, I don't know how you police the culture if there are no rules or guidelines to follow because everyone is doing their own thing. White Sox general manager Rick Hahn pushed back on that, accused Middleton of being unprofessional himself. But there's also more from the White Sox. 670 The Score reported that White Sox catcher Yasmani Grandal slapped shortstop Tim Anderson in the face during a clubhouse altercation before the All-Star break. He has denied this, but okay, over the course of the last month, Tim Anderson has been slapped in the face and knocked out in a televised game that made the rounds on the internet. I think Tim Anderson needs to go on a Ben Simmons break.
Paul, when is the last time that you've been either slapped or punched in the face?
It was at a pickup basketball game on Gessner back in 2013.
Okay, so you're running a 10-year clean sheet when it comes to people striking you in the face.
I stay away.
Tim Anderson could not make it a month.
Nope.
Tim Anderson made it 3 weeks without someone wanting to strike him in the face.
By the way, Tim Anderson was in the hot tub when he got slapped in the face.
Oh, that makes it a little bit better.
Here's what Shane Reardon said. Tim Anderson was in the tub. He says, well, F you, F that. If he wants to get out of here now, I'll pay for the flight and bring him there myself. Grandal walked over to Anderson and slapped him across the face. They got into a fight from there. Huh. Did Tim Anderson get slapped while he was naked? Because if he's in the hot tub, like, I don't know if they go in the tub with, like, boxers on or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
It is, I think
it's
back
for
in the
recovery.
Day,
they're not.
back in the day, they might have just done straight naked. I think now that everyone's a little bit more shy about themselves in the locker room, that things might be
Although
a little bit different.
Tim Anderson doesn't strike me as someone who's shy.
No, that's fair. But look, like, if you're going to get in a fight with somebody naked, you better go Viggo Mortensen in Eastern Promises. Great movie for those who haven't seen it. So the White Sox, and absolute mess right now. And that brings us to the last thing we're going to discuss, because it's on brand. We're talking about fighting here. Has anyone seen the viral videos that have been coming out of Montgomery, Alabama? There was a ferry. Some a-holes docked illegally where the ferry was supposed to dock. A worker at this dock came over to tell them they couldn't dock the boat there. And look, as somebody who has a boating license, I actually had to take it. I guess in Texas you can just get it, which made me jealous. So I took the boating license in Washington. Like, there are certain areas where it's pretty understood that you can't dock. And if you are going to dock, it's for a short amount of time. These people chose to dock the boat, get off the boat, and go gallivanting about town. And they were probably a little bit drunk. So this worker comes up to them and explains this to them. And they proceed to get more and more irate. Meanwhile, the people of the ferry that are trying to dock are watching this. And I got to say, they added some wonderful commentary to this moment in time that was about to escalate. It was a very creative impromptu chant. It started with one woman saying, like, get the bleep out of the way, and then all of a sudden everyone just started chanting, move, get out the way. A little ludicrous.
Yeah. What's staying power Ludacris has had?
It's a great song.
It is a great song.
So then this fight escalates, and again, look it up if you haven't seen it yourself. The guy who is facing these four who have docked there illegally throws his hat up in the air before the fight's about to start. And he held his own until, all of a sudden, it's four people coming after him. You have one of his co-workers who was on another boat, 16-year-old kid, jump in the water, swim over to the dock, get up on the dock, and got right into the fight. He has been called online, I am not kidding, Black Aquaman. And then, one more layer to this, as the fight escalated and more people got involved and it kind of turned into a bit of a race war, this one guy comes out of nowhere with a chair and absolutely bundles a lady who is sitting on the ground with the chair. And that was the moment where the cops stepped in and actually were able to corral everybody and stop this from turning into a bigger thing. But the four people who docked the boat were arrested. You got to look this up. But the conversation that we will carry into the next segment, who at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 would I and would Sean Mapes be willing to get in a fight for, like Black Aquaman in Montgomery, Alabama? We will discuss next. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at the Circa Resort and Casino. It's a wonderful place to go in Las Vegas, which I hopefully will be by the end of the year. Do you know what they've got at this place? Beautiful pool area with all sorts of televisions so you can watch any football game you want. They've also got a sports book on the inside, and they've got two awesome football challenges for you that you can sign up for before the start of the season. First, there's the Circa Survivor Challenge. Survivor football. You pick a winner every single week. If you are the winner after putting $1,000 down at one of Circa's three locations in Nevada, guess what? You win $8 million. Or you can do Circa's Million Challenge, where in that, you put down a grand in any of those Circa Resort and Casino locations in Nevada, and you pick five games against the spread every single week. You come in first place, you're getting $1 million. You come in last place, you get $100,000 plus quarterly prizes along the way. It's all brought to you by the Circa Resort and Casino. Get out there, have a good time, and sign up for all of the football fun today.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of the Norwegian Blue.
Remarkable bird, the Norwegian Blue, isn't it? Beautiful plumage.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.